Don't ever question me again. Ever. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're all about cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. I'm Zach Brooks, and I'm joined once again by my protege.
Brendan Fitzpatrick?
Yes. Oh, is that a question mark?
I was questioning you.
Your protege question mark, yes.
And myself.
Yeah. Last week, we discussed The Sting, and this week, due to a Paul Newman mentorship connection, we will be discussing 2001's Spy Game, directed by Tony Scott. Not Congressman Tony Scott, but director Tony Scott.
Starring Robert Redford and Brad Pitt.
Yes.
Not Paul Newman.
Did I say Paul Newman?
Did say Paul Newman.
Oh my God.
I'm questioning you. I'm not even questioning you. I'm just giving you facts.
Maybe I'm the protege. Yes. Yeah. This week, due to a Robert Redford mentorship connection, no Paul Newman in this one. We'll be talking about Spy Game, directed by Tony Scott. It's from 2001. And as Brendan said, it stars Robert Redford and Brad Pitt. If you listened to last week's episode on The Sting, you may remember I said Robert Redford looks a lot like a young Brad Pitt. Young Robert Redford looked like a young Brad Pitt. And then I realized on that podcast that they actually started a movie together. And I was like, well, we got to do that. Yep. And we ended up picking it. So
you can actually see the similarity between the two of them as well in some of the scenes, especially in Beirut. They definitely have similar features. They sort of look like they could be father and son in some of those scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You can definitely see it. So I get it.
Yeah. Do you think you could, like, I don't have both of their charts in front of me, but do you think you could, like, chart their careers to each other?
I think that you could chart the rise and fall nature of their careers, for sure, and especially the career renaissance that they both had, that Robert Redford had later on, and that now Brad Pitt is sort of starting to trend back up after a little bit of a dip.
I don't think Brad Pitt ever had a dip. If anything, I would say the only dip Brad Pitt had was around the time of, like, this movie. Because I feel like around, like, the mid-2000s,
right. Ocean's 12 and your Ocean's 13 and your...
Well, those were big hits, though.
But, yeah, no, I mean, they're not, well, you know, they're not as well-regarded, though. So, I mean, they're sort of, he's had a lot of ups and downs, is what I'm saying. I think. But he's... Well, I've never stopped loving Brad Pitt.
I mean, Ocean's 11 is a huge hit, and that was the same. Fight Club's 1999. But yeah, Ocean's 12, 2004, Ocean's 13, 2007. I think those were still big hits, but, like, we had Troy. Like, he's still a box office draw, and maybe some of these movies will come up, like Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
And then
Benjamin Button in 2008. But then I feel like Moneyball in 2011, things really started to move back up for him. Has he directed any movies? Because obviously Robert Redford has directed some movies.
Robert Redford has directed a lot of movies. In fact, he directed a movie with Brad Pitt, Legends of the Fall, which we discussed last week. A River Runs Through It, which starred Brad Pitt. But I don't know if Brad Pitt's directed anything yet. Not that I can think of. He didn't direct Allied, right?
No, he's produced a lot of stuff. Allied was Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah, but he's really big into producing. Like, he produced 12 Years a Slave, correct?
Yeah, he did.
Like, he was really well known for producing that. And
I think he's produced a ton of stuff. He's actually done some really good humanitarian work down in New Orleans as well, after Hurricane Katrina. So, Brad Pitt. And I did mistakenly say this is only our second time covering Brad Pitt on the podcast. I forgot about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So this is our third Brad Pitt movie that we covered. And our second Robert Redford after The Sting last week. All right. Well, yeah. And then at the end of this podcast, of course, we will take suggestions from listeners and us, your hosts, for what movie we should do next week that somehow connects to Spy Game. It can connect in any way. You know, be it actor, star, theme, plot, title. You know, maybe there's one, you know, spy and game, both common words in movie titles. So maybe there will be a title that's our connection. And we'll pick that movie. If you have not seen Spy Game, it is streaming on Peacock. But I believe you have to sit through ads. So it'd be like watching a movie.
I stopped it on Peacock after the second ad break because I was like, you know what? F it. I'm not dealing with this. It's worth the $3.99 to rent it on Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it seems like a movie that should be, like, You know, it should be on like Amazon Prime or something. It's a very strange movie. Should. Although I guess it is a Universal movie, so it makes sense why it's on Peacock.
Right.
I'm still confused because I have Peacock Premium.
Right. But Peacock, but there's like a Peacock Super Premium that's like ad free.
Yeah. I don't consider commercials premium then. That should be called like Peacock Regular. And if you have whatever below Peacock Premium, you have Peacock Lite.
Exactly.
Because there's nothing premium about sitting through 10 commercials breaks to watch a movie. I'm curious when they add those commercial breaks, and I mean, I'm sure they just find between scenes to add them, but I wonder if they edit anything like they do, you know, on a movie like a movie's on TNT, and they've added breaks, they edit the movie. But I guess for TNT, they're probably trying to squeeze that into like 2 hours, whereas with this movie, with Peacock, they don't have anything to squeeze it into. So, so of course, if you've not seen Spy Game, and why haven't you? It's been out for 20 years. You can skip ahead to the end of this podcast. We'll put the time in the description of the podcast when we start talking about our movie for next week. And as always, you can submit your feedback and your ratings, questions, and comments once we do pick next week's movie to @LadderMovie on Twitter, themovieladder@gmail.com, and themovieladder on Letterboxd are all ways to get in touch with us. Just a reminder, we're entering Q4 for the year.
Yep, we are.
Very exciting. So this is our 90th movie overall. And our 38th week for the year. If you've watched any of the movies that we've covered this year and you have a rating or feedback you want to send in, feel free to send that in. We can, if somebody sends in some MASH feedback, we can always add that.
We have backdated a couple of the scores as well. Like Jim Crumley for the last couple of weeks is not to call out Jim, but has gone ahead and sent us his scores after we recorded, and we do factor those in. So if you take a look at what we covered and you decide you want to send in a rating, go ahead and send it because it will count before the 52nd week.
So. For example, I saw today that AFI does a movie of the day. I get these emails from AFI and it's like a trivia, and then you click and it reveals the answer. It's kind of a fun little email campaign they do. And today's was a Raymond Chandler story starring Humphrey Bogart, and of course that is a movie we covered just a couple weeks ago. That is The Big Sleep. So if you watch The Big Sleep because of the AFI Big Sleep Day, send us your feedback and rating, and we'll factor it in. At the end of the year, we'll figure out what our top movies are, and we'll get all of that. We'll do like a big wrap-up show once in just 14 episodes from now.
14 episodes from now,
Is crazy. I know,
it's almost October, my friend.
It is. Might have to start doing some spooky movies again. We'll see.
We'll see what comes up.
All right. Before we get to best thing we watched this week, Brennan, I started to tell you a funny story.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait a second, why don't we just save this for the podcast?
For the pod.
Yeah. Yes. Everybody's probably familiar with Jeffrey Toobin and his Zoom exploits, where he was pleasuring himself and his Zoom camera turned on and all of his coworkers saw it and he got suspended. He's since gotten his job back. I don't even want to say it's a half Toobin anymore because that's like, especially on a podcast, it was nothing close to Jeffrey Toobin at all, but it was an embarrassing Zoom story that happened to me the other day. And I don't know. I think it's funny. So I often go to the gym before I work, and then I work from home, and usually I'm working in my gym clothes for like the first 3 or 4 hours of the day until I have to start getting on client calls and need to actually look presentable. And so I had an internal call at like 10 a.m. last week, and just with my coworker. I was still in my gym clothes, but my shirt was like insanely sweaty. And so I was like, I was freezing cold because it was so sweaty. So I just like ditched my shirt. And so I was just like, I mean, whatever, I'm working
from home. The video?
Yeah, I was just supposed to just be a call. And usually when you join Zoom, it will say, do you want to join with your video? Yes or no. The one time that it did not give me that option and just automatically connected to the video was when I was sitting there working with no shirt on. My coworker got a look at my bare chest for about 2 seconds before I turned that video off. But I was like, what are the chances?
What are the chances indeed?
I did have pants on and I was doing nothing inappropriate. Yeah. I just had a super sweaty shirt on and it was way too cold.
Well, I usually will go take a shower between my 8:30 call and 9:30 call at work. And I always get super paranoid that I accidentally didn't like close all the way out of the call. And I'll like come back and my camera will be on. And I'm like walking through my apartment in a towel without a shirt on or something.
Like Donald Duck,
Yeah, so I'm like Donald Ducking it. Yeah, so I'm always like double checking when I get out of the shower to make sure my camera's off. And like,
I know. I really probably should have like one of those little webcam covers because it seems like everybody who's smart has a webcam cover, but whatever.
Right.
So, yes, I would not make a good spy, clearly, because I do not know how to work Zoom and not have the video turned on.
Yes.
So, anyways, before we get to Spy Game, though, I'd like to talk about the best thing we watched this week. So, Brendan, what was the best thing you watched this week?
So the best thing I watched this week is the 2021 documentary Val, about the actor Val Kilmer. This documentary basically goes through the entire life and career of Val Kilmer, who has pretty much disappeared from Hollywood for the last 10 or 15 years as he's been battling a debilitating throat cancer diagnosis that has stolen his voice and pretty much wrecked him physically. His son narrates most of the film in his voice, with occasional interstitials of the modern Val Kilmer just talking through what his life is like now. But he has like a voice box, like, you know what you get like when like what smokers get when they get a tracheotomy. He has one of those, and it's like super heartbreaking, really emotional. But
yeah,
also,
I've heard it's a really sad movie. I have not yet seen it. We'll see if
it's,
I do.
It's
but
really, really well made, and there are some really cool, because what he used to do is actually take home videos on every film set and stage production he was ever involved with. So there's actually like a really cool scene where he goes to an audition and he's there with like in the room with Sean Penn. And it's really cool, like, it's because you like get to see like a 15-year-old Sean Penn.
Were they in a movie together?
No, they weren't. But okay. They both auditioned for, I don't remember what it was. It might have been Fast Times. Mm-hmm. It might have been Fast Times at Richmond High, and he lost the role to Sean Penn. I'm trying to remember, but that might not be right. But it might be. I think it's Fast Times. But yeah, it's just a really, really great documentary. About sort of, you know how I like movies about movies and movies about Hollywood, and this sort of is the quintessential documentary of an actor that you may not have thought about. I mean, we have, because we've talked about him on this podcast. You know,
they
like
were in
time.
A movie together, 1983 Slab Boys.
Okay.
Sean Penn, Kevin Bacon, and Val Kilmer.
That's what it was. Yeah, they were all together. It was Kevin Bacon was the other person in the room. I couldn't remember who the third person was.
6 Degrees.
Yeah, it was Kevin Bacon.
This podcast is really, you know, kind of influenced by 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. Basically playing, you know, 52 degrees of any kind of connection.
Good point.
But yes, you did start talking about Val Kilmer, who we have covered. We covered on The Doors. But of course, we are doing,
and,
you know, speaking of connections, we
Tony
are doing
Scott, Top Gun. Yep.
We did Top. He was in Top Gun, which we're doing another Tony Scott movie.
There you go. That was one reason why I wanted to talk about it this week, because it's really interesting to think about, you know, covering the young hot shot Val Kilmer in Top Gun last year, and then something like this year is like sort of what happens to people and how like fame is so fleeting and like really can be, especially like once, like how people can disappear from your consciousness in your life once a diagnosis happens.
Yeah, you know, but sadly, like, Val Kilmer is one of those actors who I always think has passed away. So even when this documentary came out, I was like, oh yeah, it's because he's not alive anymore. But no, he is.
Right.
I don't know why. I think I confuse him sometimes with like Patrick Swayze and you know, some of the other actors from around that time that have passed on.
But yeah, I highly recommend people check it out. But
what's the streaming on Amazon?
It is on Amazon. Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime. So
nice.
What did you watch this week? Hopefully something a little more uplifting.
Well, you know, to be honest, I didn't watch very many movies this week. So you and I both watched The Spy Who Loved Me because we were on post-show recaps last week talking about it. That's probably the best thing I watched, but I've already talked about that for a few hours.
Yeah.
I didn't really like the Criterion movie I watched this week. I watched The Fisher King, and it was fine. It was good, but it's... Mm. I didn't love it. I don't think it's this classic that sometimes people say it's like this forgotten classic. Mm-hmm. that. But so actually, I'm going to say the best thing I watched was last week's What If. I really liked the last week's episode of What If. And if you're not watching What If, I know, like, I'm not usually into watching animated shows, but I think we've talked about it a couple times on this podcast. I just think it's nice. It's super bite-sized because they're just half-hour episodes, but they're very cinematic. And they're little, like, self-contained alternate reality stories about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This last one focused on Killmonger, who was the villain from the Black Panther movie played by Michael B. Jordan. They actually got Michael B. Jordan to do the voice for it. Mm-hmm. And it's basically about if Killmonger saved Tony Stark back during the initial when Tony Stark was captured in the first Iron Man movie. And it's a connection I never even realized because Killmonger is an Afghanistan war veteran from Afghanistan. And I never even put together that Tony Stark was captured in Afghanistan. So he, like, theoretically could have been in the same place at the same time to have an impact. Now, I don't, you know, he's a young actor. And this was, you know, in 2008, this was around the time that Michael B. Jordan was, like, just shortly after he was on The Wire, I believe. Right. So I don't know if the ages quite match up, but it is, like, a fun thing to think about where there is that connection. So
it depends how old you want to think Killmonger is in Black Panther, I guess, which is, what, 2017?
Well, so, and I guess because in the beginning of Black Panther, when Killmonger witnesses something happen to his dad, I think that was 1985, right? Or the mid-80s, which, so that would put Killmonger right around my age, right around your age. So, I guess he would have been
older. It works out.
So, and it's just, you know, you see how just it's, you know, sliding doors, butterfly effect, whatever you want to call it, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And some episodes have been better than others. I actually think the premiere is one of the weaker episodes just because it's very much.
I loved the premiere, but I also think that each episode has been better than the premiere. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even in context, like, I think the premiere is still a really fun episode, but it's the least what-if-y of the what-ifs. For sure.
Right. Yeah. It really kind of follows the same trajectory as Captain America: The First Avenger, which is a good one to kind of, like, whet your appetite and get you kind of in the mood for what the show is. But then each episode has been just some really interesting scenarios and, like, surprisingly for a show on Disney Plus, very dark and depressing episodes.
Yeah.
And almost like Twilight Zone-esque sometimes the way that they end, where they end with like a bleak ending.
Yeah. There's a really good Doctor Strange one that I really enjoyed. There's also a really good Black Panther as Star-Lord one
that one was great.
Everybody loves, that is really groundbreaking. And then I believe the one coming up tomorrow focuses on Thor.
Yeah,
that's all I know about it.
Yeah, so. I saw they tweeted a picture of Thor. Mm-hmm. It's nice because they don't announce the episodes beforehand, so you don't really know, except like a day before, you might know who the main character is. And I'm surprised because I was not a huge fan of the Black Panther movie. I think it's like middle tier Marvel. I don't think it's top tier like a lot of people do. But I do think my two favorite episodes of What If have been the two about Wakanda and the Black Panther characters.
Expanding on the Black Panther, yeah. I agree.
Which I think is what I don't like about Black Panther is that I thought it could have been so much more than it was.
Mm-hmm. So I think it leaned on a lot of genre tropes that it was trying to make sure that it hit. And it does those very, very well. But if you're familiar with those tropes, like the James Bondian casino scene, then it hits differently for you.
Hey, it does James Bond casino scene better than Star Wars does.
It definitely does. It definitely does it very, very well. But
So I would recommend it. I think there's only three or four episodes of What If left this season. And it's on Disney Plus.
There you go. Well, speaking of spies, should we get into Spy Game?
Yeah, why are we speaking of spies?
Because we talked about the James Bondian scene in.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was trying to do a segue.
You were. Here's a segue for you. Last week, Brennan and I talked about a spy movie with the word "spy" in the title. That was The Spy Who Loved Me. You can find that on Post Show Recaps. You do have to be a patron to listen to that one, but it is on there. So we're doing two spy movies in 1 week because we are doing Spy Game today, and. It is a story about, you know, it's got a couple different, like, timelines sort of told in that, like, flashback structure. But you're learning about the relationship grow between Robert Redford's character, Nathan Muir, and Brad Pitt's character, Tom Bishop. Beginning of the movie, we see Tom Bishop get captured in China. And the main timeline of the movie takes place over the 24 hours where they're going to execute Bishop for espionage. And you see you really don't see much of present time Tom Bishop Seeing much more about you're seeing much more Nathan Mirror in the real time. You're seeing a little bit of Bishop captured, but you're seeing flashbacks and stories about Mirror and Bishop working together on various missions, leading to why he ended up in China in the first place. And so it's kind of a cross between. I was watching this and I was like, oh, this has Ken Leong in it, who of course was in Lost. And we're telling a story over 24 hours, which, you know, not quite in real time, but you do see the little timer flash up on the screen. So it's almost like a combination with the flashbacks and Ken Leong of Lost and the 24-hour timer of 24.
Oh, 24. Yep.
I should love this show or this movie because it's combining two of my favorite shows.
Absolutely. And especially when you have like a sleazy executive head of the agency played by a really good actor in Stephen Delane, and he's really not given much to chew on. And that was like, I saw Stephen Delane was in this movie and I was like, this is going to be really fun. He's going to chew the scenery. And he just sort of sits there with like a sappy look on his face. Like,
and if you don't recognize the name Stephen Delane, because I didn't before I watched this movie, he is Stannis Baratheon. Speaking of another TV show. So Stannis Baratheon from Game of Thrones. And this movie also has Benedict Wong, who, speaking of MCU, is Wong in the Doctor Strange movies. I think he's probably a voice actor on What If. So TV connections all over the place for
he's
Spidey.
He's barely in the movie. He's sort of in the background a few times, but he's not really.
He's in the opening scene, and then he is the like assistant for the one of the assassination attempts early on in Vietnam.
Yep.
So, I've heard from some people, we tweeted this out, and like random people came out of the woodwork and said, I love Spy Games.
This movie is great. This movie is really good.
So I was very excited to watch it, as I think you were. So Brendan, what were your thoughts on Spy Game? Were you a fan?
I wanted to be a fan. And that's the thing I think that is most disappointing about this is that you have two amazing actors who we talked about last week have very similar patterns and very similar looks and work really well on screen together. Like their charismas match, their acting styles match. They look like they could be father and son. Brad Pitt and Robert Redford go together really well, but maybe that's part of the problem is that they're too alike.
Mm.
And so. One of them almost needed to be a different personality than the other. One of them needed to be a little bit more of an asshole or a little bit more of a jokester, but they were both bringing the same energy throughout the movie to each other that they sort of like didn't magnetize. And so it didn't quite work for me. Like it was the opposite of opposites attracting. It was these two guys are way too similar to have the buddy cop feel that I felt like this needed to have for it to work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I feel the same way you did, where like I was going into this very excited. Mm. It's very, you know, it is a very exciting, loud, aggressive movie. And it's Tony Scott. This is late career Tony Scott too. So, you know, Top Gun wasn't quite, you know, with the swirling cameras and the loud explosions and the thumping mechanical music. You know, this version of Tony Scott, we get this a lot in a lot of his movies. You know, I think of some of the ones with Denzel Washington, we get this. Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, the remake, which of course we did the original last year.
3 years before Man on Fire.
Yeah.
And a couple years after Enemy of the State.
Yeah. Yeah. Enemy of the State is a really good comparison to this. And who knows, maybe we'll end up doing Enemy of the State next week. Because I do think like Tony Scott action movies are very fun. And Tony Scott, of course, died in 2012. Did he commit suicide? Is that how he died? I do not recall.
I thought there was some kind of accident, but I don't remember many details being released.
Yeah, I remember when it happened. I actually felt like it was earlier than 2012. But it was not. So he died August 19th, 2012. Let's see. Death on Wikipedia. Yes. So he died by suicide jumping off the Vincent Thomas Bridge in San Pedro, Port District of Los Angeles. So, I do remember hearing about that. Of course, his brother, Ridley Scott, is a very famous director, directed Alien movies, the first Alien movie, I should say, among other movies. So, you know, you're getting right off the bat with this movie, you're getting swirling cameras and that, you know, that that score that you mm-hmm. you know from these mid-2000s action movies.
One of the things I really loved is so we get sucked right into this flashback in Vietnam of where Nathan first met Tom. And I thought this was one of the highlights of the movie because the way he shot Vietnam felt so different mm-hmm. in look and style than some of the other films that we've done that have a Vietnam component. Like, instead of it being green and smoky and gray, this was like after all of the napalm. So the hues were orange and yellow and brown, and there was very little green in those scenes. Like mm-hmm. everything was very yeah. like
it looks very dark. Yellow to me.
Yeah, and so I thought that was a really cool different look than we've had in some of our earlier Vietnam films. And I thought that I really enjoyed that sequence specifically. I thought it was really well done.
I really liked all of the flashbacks, and there's a really great training montage about, you know, 45 minutes into this movie that when I was watching, I was like, yes, all right, now we're going, now we're rolling. Because the movie opens with this espionage mission in China, and you don't know what's going on, but you see, obviously you see Tom Bishop, played by Brad Pitt, very recognizable. If you know Ken Long and Benedict Wong, you'll see them in
there.
So you'll recognize them. But I mean, this was before both of them were bigger name stars. I don't know if you can even call Ken Long.
Yeah, was this before or after Ken Long was in, which was it, Rush Hour 2? Was that the one he was in?
Was he in Rush Hour 2? I don't. I mean, Rush Hour 2 was before this movie, I believe. I believe that was in the 90s. So, but you don't really know what's going on. He almost succeeds in the mission, but ends up getting captured. But again, you're watching a movie about spies, so you almost wonder, did he mean to get captured? He went to China because of a cholera outbreak, which the cholera outbreak is never really plays, you know, never really comes into play again in the movie.
Yeah, they used it as a cover more than anything.
Right. There's a trade deal going on between the United States and China, which, you know, nothing gets a movie to an exciting level like trade negotiations. You know, people love that in their movies. So he gets captured, but then, you know, in the real time, you don't see Tom Bishop again until the end. I mean, you see a couple quick shots of him
You see the Tom Bishop we get is very short-haired, which is the opposite of the other flashback Tom we get. We get basically Brad Pitt in Fight Club looking Brad Pitt.
Right.
Like, you know, close-cropped hair.
Well, and I do wonder if the reason for that, I'm trying to do kind of some of the math in my head, right?
You're seeing at that time.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing not even that, but you're seeing Tom Bishop and he meets Muir in 1975. So when they're in Vietnam, and this movie takes place in 1991, although it was released in 2001. So there's a whole bunch of
math I was trying to do. I was like, when is this movie taking place?
Yeah, I say at the beginning of the movie, it takes place in 1991 because they're referencing the Cold War a lot in this movie as well. And, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of facts that we can get wrong about the historical accuracy that we're talking about here. But, you know, in order to have these scenes with Robert Redford and Brad Pitt together, and, you know, they're age different, maybe the reason why you're not seeing 1991 Tom Bishop is because he should be significantly older at that point, because Brad Pitt isn't de-aged or anything. And Brad Pitt is playing himself at the same age during these flashbacks. And you do see Robert Redford in some kind of young guy makeup, which to me is a little distracting sometimes when you see him. You're like, okay, you look way younger than you should. Like,
dyed his hair.
Gave him makeup. For me, the high point was just the some of the different flashback stories we're seeing between them. I also, you know, this Muir is kind of up to something throughout the movie. You're not quite sure what. I'm still not sure I totally understand what he's up to. So as he's telling these stories, to me, he's an unreliable narrator through the whole movie.
Absolutely.
But he's trying to
get as much information as he can from the guys inside the room so that he can buy time and give that information to a team that he's going to hire to go rescue Tom, because the CIA has decided they're going to hang him out to dry.
Right.
So he doesn't want to let Tom die. So he has to do everything that he has in his spy arsenal to basically con the CIA into giving him all this information so that he can then, quote unquote, use the CIA's money, which is actually his money, to fund an op to go rescue Tom.
Right.
And then
that's Operation Dining Out.
Operation Dining Out.
Yes. Dinner Out. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and I do like the way that the movie kind of comes together at the end where he uses the, because this whole movie takes place on the last day of his career where, you know, Muir is retiring the next day. So good timing by Bishop to get captured on this day because the next day Muir wouldn't have been there to save Bishop.
Exactly.
But he has this, you know, the certificate from the director of the CIA and he, you know, he uses that to fraud the signature. Like all of that was like, that was like fun process stuff. And I wish we would have seen more fun process throughout this movie of the different missions that they're on together. And
yeah, I think so too. Instead of stopping down for 50 minutes for one mission.
Because you're not sure what Muir is up to this whole time.
Right.
When he's telling these stories and you're seeing the flashbacks, in my mind, I'm like, well, are we seeing what's actually happening and what actually happened in these different countries where they had missions together? Or are we seeing the story that Muir is telling and there's really some bigger espionage thing, bigger scheme going on and they're going to uncover a mole? You know, Stephen Delane is going to end up being a mole in the CIA.
I was waiting for working together to
Together to uncover that. And really, it's just no, like, Muir is trying to buy time so that he can get Bishop out of prison. So it just, the way that it's told from like a narrative perspective for me, I just didn't know what exactly I was watching that I needed to believe. Just like watching The Sting last week, except The Sting, you were watching things that didn't end up being necessarily true. With this, everything ended up seemingly was true. All the stories he told were true, their history together, the missions they were on together.
The only thing that wasn't true was his, basically every time the phone rang, it was a different one of his ex-wives.
Right, and which were all cover ex-wives,
Yeah, he didn't actually have four ex-wives. They were all cover wives. But basically, because it was always somebody different that he could pretend was an ex-wife calling or Gladys or,
Right, yeah, Gladys plays his secretary, and she's kind of his, like, you know, if we're talking about 24, she's like his Chloe.
Yeah, she's basically. Yeah, she's fantastic. I really like that actress. Marianne Jean-Baptiste, who I mostly know from the CBS crime procedural Without a Trace. She was on that for like 7 or 8 years. Huh? I did watch a lot of Without a Trace in the beginning because it also had Anthony LaPaglia, who liked as an actor. And then she's also in... Marianne Jean-Baptiste was also in, what else was she in? She was in,
Well, while you're looking that up, she was in, she had an uncredited role in Edge of Tomorrow.
Right, and she was on she was on a season of 24, I believe. She's a very good character actress. She pops up on a lot of these procedural TV shows, but I mostly know her from Without a Trace, but I put it in my notes.
Yeah, she was also on Homecoming, which I'm not sure if she was if that was the first season or the second. I never watched the second season.
I never saw the second season. I did look that up, but I didn't see that one. But yeah,
Ryan, she's on. That might have been what you're thinking of when you said she's on 24.
Oh yeah, it could be. That could be what I was thinking of.
No, she does a great job. Like, doesn't really get the recognition she deserves for how much she does for Muir, I feel like. Also, you know, talk about leaving somebody out to dry. Like, and this is another problem I had with the movie, is just the amount of stuff that Muir's able to do without security. You know, he's in the Pentagon or he's in Langley. Like, this security's got to be all over everything he's doing, and that he, like, that she aided him in having a covert CIA mission go to rescue Bishop behind their backs. Like, she's going to be in some deep trouble. Like, she's at least going to lose her job.
If they can prove anything, that's the thing, is if they can prove anything. And
I mean, she calls him. Don't they have logs of the phone calls? I'm sure the phone calls are recorded. Yeah, that's true. She didn't use a payphone.
And I think that's why it's critical that this took place in 1991, is so you don't have to worry about cell phones.
True.
Because cell phones, like, this whole op would be scrubbed in 5 minutes if they were all using cell phones to communicate with each other instead of office phones and payphones.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that it takes place in 1991 because, you know, you feel like now you're like, oh, my God, 1991. I mean, that's 30 years ago. You know, it feels like that was a long time ago. But it was only 10 years before this movie came out. This movie came out in 2001. So
I think it makes sense for the movie.
Well, and to have like some of the backdrop of the Cold War, although, there, you know, it's really not mentioned that much. I mean, besides it being just like espionage and they're in Beirut. And
it's a couple of years after the Berlin Wall fell, which was, you know, 89, I believe. So.
Yeah, I think that's right. And they are, yeah, they are in East Germany at one point too.
Yeah, trying to get people across. Right,
which is where Muir and Bishop, you know, where, again, Muir targets Bishop. He knows he wants to recruit Bishop, and he goes there and he runs a scam on Bishop to get him to sign up. So it's, again, like, you just don't, like, the whole time I'm like, all right, this guy Muir is doing something, like, he's either working against everybody or he's doing something where you can't trust this guy, but in the end, you kind of couldn't. All he was doing was just trying to help save both Bishop and Elizabeth Hadley, who was Bishop's love interest in this movie, who was, you know, she was also imprisoned by the Chinese because of Muir's actions, right? Muir did that to, you know, again, I'm not quite sure even why he did that, but I guess just to keep Bishop from being involved with her because Muir didn't trust her.
Is that your read on that? Well, my read on it is that he figured out that not only was he running an op on her, but she was running an op on him for whatever organization she was working for. Like, she was selling information on him while he was using her. And so, I mean, it's a, you know, unfortunate spy versus spy thing. And Muir was like, you have to cut off your relationship with her because she's selling you out. Basically, and, you know, Tom is like, I don't care, I love her. And he's like, no, you have to burn her. And then, you know, they do, and she gets captured. And, you know, it's...
Do we know how long she was... I mean, because Tom doesn't know, right, that she's in Chinese prison. He's able to figure it out. And that's some of the stuff I wish we would have seen.
Right.
Like, just what was leading up to this mission in China that Bishop goes and does. Because somehow he figures out that Elizabeth is there. Right. And he plans this mission to go save her.
I wish we got a little more of that as well, because it sort of goes unremarked upon that Muir reveals that he's the one that burned her for the CIA and got her imprisoned for the release of, what was it, a British diplomat or something like that?
Something like that. But he doesn't reveal it to Bishop, right? We never
correct.
See Bishop.
Yeah, he never reveals it to Bishop. Yeah, and that's, I wish we had seen a flashback scene of him talking to Bishop after she's been burned and being like, it wasn't us.
Yeah, right. And like then you can go back and rewatch sort of that scene and know that he was lying.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that would have been very good. And it feels like that was something this was missing, for sure.
I mean, outside of that rooftop scene, which is where, you know, of course, there's the whole quote about, like, this isn't a kid's game.
It's
a game by Muir. You don't have a ton, and this is the same problem we had with The Sting, or I had with The Sting, is you don't have a ton between the two leads together. You know, you have them working on some missions, but a lot of the missions that they're on, Muir is doing one thing, Bishop's doing another thing, and you see them kind of together. But besides the training montage and this scene on the rooftop, like, the scene on the rooftop is the big dramatic scene that you have between the two actors, and you're right. It would have been great to have something where after Elizabeth has been captured, Bishop and Muir are talking about it, and either Bishop's, you know, believing him or not believing him, and, you know, you could get some really good, like, scenery that you could chew on in that for those two actors, but you don't get that at all.
I think another thing that would have helped is there's a scene when Bishop is trying to get the last informant out of Berlin, and he's got him in the car, and he pretends to be drunk so that the German agents won't find them. And he's on the phone, and Muir tells him to burn him, and he is like refusing to do it. He's like, "Don't do it! I can't do it! I can't do it! This guy is coming across. I'm coming across." And I wish that all takes place over the phone, that argument with Muir. And I think that would have been it would have been better if that happened in person.
Right. And that isn't that the scene that leads to the big blow up on the rooftop?
Yeah, because it's on the rooftop.
Bishop is mad that he would give up an asset.
Exactly.
And Muir is saying civilians don't matter. The mission is what's important.
Exactly.
Which civilians don't matter. The mission is what's important is what leads to him burning Elizabeth Hadley to get her captured. And then by the end of the movie, apparently civilians are important, and Muir has found his heart and it wants to save the happy couple.
He's learned a valuable lesson that you really can make friends in this business, basically. Yeah.
And he shouldn't bet on the Washington football team because he lost some money, apparently. Speaking of sports, I do love the Padres hat that Brad Pitt wears in this movie.
Can we talk about the Padres hat? Because
it's awesome.
I wrote this down and I was like, no one should believe that he is not a spy because no one who's a tourist in Beirut is going to be wearing a Padres hat. Because there are no Padres fans. Apologies to John Kilpatrick. are no Padres fans.
Is John Kilpatrick a Padres
fan? He is. He loves the Padres hat. Yeah. Oh, or maybe he just loves the Padres hat.
I think he's a Philly fan.
We'll get to that in feedback. But,
no, I love that hat too. I would buy that hat if I could find it.
It is like, it's a
very cool hat. Yeah, but it should have been like a Dodgers or, you know.
Right. It should
like
have been.
If you want to look like an idiot American, like don't root for the
the team that doesn't have any actual fans.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know any Padres fans?
No, I don't.
No, I don't either.
That's a funny thing. I'm going to ask and I'm in a group chat for sports and I'm going to say, are there any Padres fans in here? And we'll see.
I want to know.
We'll see if anybody responds by the end of this podcast.
Would you wear a Padres hat overseas if you were trying to blend in?
Yes. All right. I just asked. Are there any Padres fans in here? We'll see if anybody answers to that. I still like that hat. I'm not a Padres fan, but I would wear that hat. Maybe the Padres will make the playoffs this year. I don't know how they're doing.
If people want to see some like real life drama around what was happening in Beirut in the 2000s, well after this. Anthony Bourdain has a really good Parts Unknown where he ends up getting stuck in Beirut after a bombing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the best episodes of his TV show that he's ever had. Like so the scene where he's trying to get across town to eat is like very much reminded me of that episode of Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if that was what was really going on, where you have that scene of them eating together and they're running through like this bombed out area to get to a place to get pancakes or whatever. I guess that is an important scene because that was where Bishop gives Muir the flask.
Exactly.
Right. So which is he's caused at Operation Dining Out, right?
Yeah.
Which leads to, that's how he knows Muir's the one who got him out. When he hears Operation Dining Out is how he got out. I'll be honest. I did not put that connection together at the end of this movie. I only know that because it's mentioned on the Wikipedia page for this movie.
Yeah.
So I did not realize that.
Were you thrown off at all that Elizabeth Hadley would recognize Brad Pitt across a helicopter while they're flying away? And you have the reaction? Like, there was no lighting on that helicopter. How did she recognize who he was?
She's been in Chinese prison for a while. Like, he's only been in there for 24 hours. She's been in Chinese prison much longer than 24 hours.
And he didn't look anything like he did the last time they saw each other. So,
true.
Like,
and he's all beat up. Maybe somebody mentioned that, like, in that other helicopter is this Tom Bishop.
Yeah,
guy.
Tom's over there.
He's a Padres fan. Yeah, maybe he had a Padres hat. She's like, oh, that has to be Tom.
It has to be Tom. I don't know any other Padres.
All right, so one thing I was realizing about this movie is this movie obviously came out in 2001. It actually came out in November of 2001. Okay. So we are actually 2 months exactly away from the date, from the 20-year anniversary of this movie coming out. But more what I wanted to point out was this movie came out 2 months and 10 days after 9/11.
Oh.
And I'm really curious and I haven't seen anything, but I wonder what it was like when this has got to be one of the first big, well, I guess 24 actually came out right around 9/11 too. Right. And that's all about terrorism.
I believe it premiered 2 weeks after 9/11.
Yeah. And so this movie to come out 2 months after, and this is about spies, partially in the Middle East, doing CIA covert operations. It's just the timing of this is
wild.
I wonder if people had like an appetite for this kind of movie after 9/11, or if people had like no interest in seeing this.
Right.
Now, I do, of course, have the box office in front of me, and it surpassed the budget. So it had $143 million that it made. So people did go see this movie. But I just wonder what the kind of zeitgeist was around this when it came out. Because I remember hearing about it, but I had never seen it. So
I'm also curious if this was originally supposed to be released earlier, but maybe not because they only stopped filming in March 2001.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think
I would be curious if it was originally slated to premiere earlier. But yeah, I mean, I guess November makes sense, but I wonder if they thought about delaying it at all, but it doesn't look like they did from what I can find on the wiki.
Right. And what I do see is that it opened at number 3 on the box office. So I don't know what else was, let's see if we could find that box office. For that week. What do you think was the number one? This is always a fun game to play. What do you think was the number one movie of 2001, November 23rd? Thanksgiving weekend, probably.
It's definitely a comedy. Is it Meet the Parents?
It is not a comedy and is not Meet the Parents. It is Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So
there you go. Good Thanksgiving movie there.
Monsters, Inc. was number 2. That Spy Game was number 3.
Wow.
And I'm just looking to see if any movies that we've covered are on this list, and I do not. Rush Hour 2, though, actually is on this list. So the second reference of Rush Hour 2.
Ken Leong was in Rush Hour 1, which was released in 98. So there you go. Yeah.
Yes. Lots of, Jurassic Park 3 is way down on this list, but it's on.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I don't see any movies that we've covered.
Well, that would probably have been the tail end of the run for Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah, probably the end of the summer movies that are still Moulin Rouge, Shrek is still on here. Planet of the Apes, the remake. Ooh. But these are all really far down the list. So it's like these made under 100,000 for the weekend.
Right. So yeah, I'm sure it was well past their prime then.
Yeah. All right. Well, what else do you want to say about this movie? Do you have anything else you want to?
So I do think it's a really interesting fun fact that Brad Pitt turned down doing Bourne Identity for this movie.
Hmm.
How do things change for two of the stars of Ocean's 11 and the Ocean's franchise if Matt Damon does Spy Game with Robert Redford and Brad Pitt does the Bournes?
I don't see the Bourne franchise. I don't see Brad Pitt being in a major franchise like that. Like, is Brad Pitt? I take that back because he's in the Oceans movies. So I mean, he would be in, especially around this time.
I don't think he'd do an action franchise. I don't think Bourne becomes a franchise. I think you're right. I think it becomes a one and done.
Yeah. And the first Bourne Identity is great. Also, as you were talking about that, I was like, oh yeah, like then he would have taken the place of Jeremy Renner. No, that's wrong. No, Matt Damon. Yeah, Jeremy Renner was just in like one of the Bourne movies. He was not Bourne.
Renner comes in earlier then.
Maybe. I don't know. Was he a big enough star by the time it's like 2010 is when he has his big breakout.
True.
So that is an interesting sliding doors and also a nice connection to the Oceans movies.
So Matt Damon has had a couple of like spy type movies where he's like the informant or where he's like
The informant, he's like, is he a spy in The Informant?
He's a whistleblower who gets caught up in like an investigation. But he's had a couple of roles like that, but I wonder how he would fare in this. I think he would have been pretty good in this, honestly.
Yeah, I think he would have been fine. I don't feel like you get like super charismatic Brad Pitt in this movie. And I think that's another thing. I'm ragging on this movie a lot, and I think it was like enjoyable enough. I just think it could have been a lot better.
Yeah,
with a movie that stars Brad Pitt and Robert Redford and is, you know, directed by Tony Scott, it should be this really intense, suspenseful movie. And I just didn't ever feel either of them bringing that much charisma to the screen. Mm. And I also didn't feel like I was never worried about Bishop because we didn't see Bishop in the Chinese prison. Right. So like if Bishop got killed in the Chinese prison, like,
we only see it towards the end where he's starting to be tortured.
You see him in the beginning when he's trying to get the covert mission, but I was never like really connected to that character where, you know, as
they
had
shown us instead of told us that he was slated for execution, that would have
just, I don't know, like, maybe the movie's better if instead it's this whole movie is Bishop is being interrogated by them and they're asking him about his connection to Muir and Bishop is telling these stories instead of
Elizabeth Hadley.
Because, with them, they have like a love story, but we don't really ever see why they're in love. I mean, they, you know,
Yeah.
Brad Pitt. She falls in love with it's Brad Pitt.
Yeah, of course. She falls in love with him because he's Brad Pitt, and he says his name is Terry, which...
Terry!
Come on, dude.
Come on, Terry. Yeah, fat freaking city, Terry. Yeah. What do you think, you know, the game we like to play sometimes? Would you watch this if it was a TV show? Do you think it'd be better if it's a TV show? Because they could have, like, each episode could be a different mission.
I would, because this reminds me a lot of Narcos, especially Narcos Mexico.
Okay.
Narcos Mexico had a really good season that this really reminded me of, and I think this movie would be better as a TV show, especially when you're stringing out the individual ops to be, like, one op per episode and one training mission per episode, and then... Like, yeah, I think it's, I think it would be a lot more exciting as a TV show.
Yeah.
And especially if you got the thing about these movies, and we've talked about this and we hit on this earlier, is that in these movies, you need two leads who are slightly more dissimilar. Like, you need people who don't quite gel, but still have that charismatic connection to each other and work well together in screen presence, but have opposite personalities in some way.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like, yes, because they are pretty similar in this.
Yes, but
what I like about is that it is kind of like a Walter White Jesse relationship between them, just to throw another prestige TV show out there, in that, you know, Muir is showing Bishop the ropes. He's teaching him about, you know, like, just, this is how, you know, we can't care about civilians. This is how you look in this. That was why I like the training montage so much. He's like, you know, look in this reflective surface and you can see the guy in there. You know, don't waste these 10 seconds. Don't question me. Like, you're seeing him coaching Bishop. And I guess what you're supposed to think about is that Bishop's mission in the beginning of the movie is because of his coaching from Muir, you know, throughout these history. But we haven't seen any of that coaching when we see this mission, and he fails the mission. So, he didn't do that good of a job with learning.
He's got to screw up.
So, it was, you know, I would say with this movie, good, could have been great. What do you think of Tony Scott's style? So we've, you know, of course, we talked about Top Gun last year. But we haven't talked about any modern Tony Scott on this podcast, besides Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, which we watched the original. I watched the remake that week. And it is very similar in, like, just that frenetic pace and that aggression. But what do you think about these, like, mid-2000s Tony Scott movies?
I really enjoyed the style of this movie. Like, I liked the quick cuts. I liked the ticking clock. I liked the way he used colorization to help define which era of the training and flashbacks we were in. I liked the soundtrack. I thought the soundtrack was really good. I liked that he didn't rely on a tropey 60s/early 70s song to get us into the Vietnam sequence. He did one that you don't normally hear.
True.
In those movies is
what song was it?
Like, it's like Donna, it's a 60s song, but yeah, he didn't, like, do Betty, like, Flight of the Valkyries or The Doors, or, you know, it was, I liked it. It was a different song. He didn't use, you know, All on the Watchtower, which would have been, like, the easy way to go.
Yeah, didn't use CCR.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So okay, I liked that a lot. And yeah, I really thought that the Beirut sequences were shot really well, especially, like, going on the rooftops and going through the zoom lens of the camera. And I thought it was all, like, shot really, really well and compelling.
Yeah. So I did have one fun thing that I wrote down, which is, like, it's not quite a connection, but it's like the Tony Scott update of an older 1970s movie. So, you know, of course, this movie, we talked about 3 Days of the Condor last week. Mm-hmm. Neither of us have seen 3 Days of the Condor. We wondered, though, if this was kind of like, could you map this character as, like, the older version of Robert Redford's character in 3 Days of the Condor? And almost like a spiritual sequel to that movie. And maybe we'll find out if we do 3 Days of the Condor next week. But I also wanted to point out the movie before this that Tony Scott did was Enemy of the State. Mm. In Enemy of the State, you can definitely map Gene Hackman's character in Enemy of the State to Gene Hackman's character in The Conversation. And It really does feel like that's the spiritual sequel of the conversation. I watched both of those on my personal ladder in back-to-back, back-to-back last year. And if you've never seen The Conversation, The Conversation is excellent. I highly, highly recommend The Conversation.
Absolutely.
But then when you finish it, watch Enemy of the State. They're very different. The Conversation is very quiet. Enemy of the State is very loud. Mm-hmm. But you cannot tell me that is not the same character played by Gene Hackman in both movies.
Right. And it's actually really funny because that's like, I think this is what you're getting at, is this sort of seems to be hit Tony Scott's bread and butter, where he takes an idea from a classic film he watched and updates it, mm-hmm. whether it's Pelham 1-2-3 or this or, Enemy of the State. And even Top Gun is like an update of some classic fighter pilot war movies mm-hmm. from the, early days of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like your Wings.
I would be curious if we watched, if we watched Unstoppable or some of his other later movies. Unstoppable might be his last movie. That was 2010. Yeah. I would imagine
To other earlier works.
Like disaster movies. It's Unstoppable like other disaster movies. I don't really want to watch Unstoppable next week, but if it gets picked, we pick it. So all right, well, before we figure out what we're watching next week, why don't we get into some feedback, and then we'll do connections for this Back to the Sting. So first email is from Jeff. We've had a nice hot streak of movies that Jeff liked. Is this another one? Let's find out. First time I've seen this, and I really liked it. Thought Redford and Pitt and the supporting cast were all very good. The way the story was told with the introduction of Bishop and the story all while Muir was working to defy the CIA brass and rescue him was just the right mixture to keep the story moving and interesting. A little bit of a surprise at the end, but a good one, and he gives it 4.0. So
nice.
Jeff.
Another hit for Jeff.
You know, one more and we're going to give you a Porsche to drive away in, Jeff.
Or a set of steak knives.
Yeah.
Right. Megan the librarian wrote in and she says, here's my short review of Spy Game. Meh. 2.5 stars from Megan the librarian.
From Megan the librarian?
Megan the librarian.
Shout out to libraries, because I got the Blu-ray from the library to watch this. I didn't have to pay that $3.99. No there scratches. Did not skip. It was great.
All right. No very skips.
Yeah, no skips. All right. Jim Crumley. He said he's not going to get to Spy Game this week, but at least he got his email in on time.
Yep.
And Jim says, though I vaguely remember it as being okay. I'll be interested to hear if your takes are any hotter than that.
Well, and Jim, we'll not find out star in rating,
it's been a while. So. Mm-hmm. Jim, you tell us, were our takes hot? I feel like they were medium.
I'm about to find out. All right. Kyle, we haven't heard from Kyle in a while. Right. Kyle says, 2001 is one of my favorite years for movies, but I've never seen this one. My initial reaction was that some of the camera work, edit, music cues, and line readings were so cheesy that it almost felt like a parody spy film. Hard to take seriously, and found myself laughing out loud at a couple of otherwise quote-unquote dramatic things, like the timestamp freeze frames. 24, which came out in the same year, did this way much better. Can't believe that according to Wikipedia, Pitt turned down the Bourne Identity for this. Oof. That said, I enjoyed the non-linear nature of the story and how Redford's character stealthily manipulated everyone. 2.75 from Kyle.
Yeah, the freeze frame with the time is very funny, and it is like very cheesy, especially because, again, like I just never felt the like there was a ticking clock. Like talking about 24,
right.
When you see the clock come on screen, you're like, oh no,
counting down. It's
right, and this is just, but this is counting down too. This is counting down to 8 a.m. the next morning when he's supposed to be executed.
Right.
But I just never was like, oh no, 8 a.m. is going to come. I just didn't ever feel that drama.
Feel like
he
was actually not going to make it.
Yeah, that tension.
I agree. There was never a moment where I felt like he wasn't going to make it by 8 a.m.
And I didn't care if I really, like, it wasn't even that I even thought about, is he going to make it? I just didn't care if he made it. I was like, okay, like the cool stuff that Bishop does is in the past. We've seen that. I haven't seen 1991 Bishop do anything successfully. So why do I care if he survives?
There's also like a moment late in the film where after he faxes he spends all night putting together the fake requisition.
Right. Well, if only he had Photoshop, he could have done it so much better. Over.
And then he like wakes up and all of a sudden like the sun is out. And I'm like, oh, is it past time? Did he miss it? Are we about to find out whether or not he was rescued? And then there's like another 20 minutes of office conversation
Right, because it's like 6 a.m. He didn't get up. Yeah, good thing he didn't sleep through his alarm. That would have been really bad. Yeah. He wakes up, it's 8:05. He's like, shit.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Yeah. All right. Well, John G., John Gapatrick, who you referenced earlier, he is in for another email to us, and he says, Spy Game is fun. On the surface, this movie looks like a close cousin to Enemy of the State, which preceded it in director Tony Scott's filmography, but I thought it shared more in common with Citizen Kane than the 1998 techno spy thriller with Will Smith. It unfolds in chapters at a very distinct locations and feels in each one of these chapters we learn something new about the two leads. Some chapters were more successful than others, but on the whole, besides being a little too long, I think the destination makes the journey well worth taking. Side note, Brad Pitt is so cool in this movie, he wears an awesome San Diego Padres baseball cap that I immediately bought after I watched it. Oh, he bought
the See? He bought the hat. I didn't
That doesn't mean he's a Padres fan, but that's very cool that he owns the hat. And John Kilpatrick is in the same group that I sent the Padres question about. And he responded, he said, is this about Spy Game?
Baby. No right. Spoilers.
Yeah. Spoilers, I don't see anybody else who says that they are a Padres fan, though.
All right, 3.5 from John Kilpatrick. So that's going to give us an average listener rating of 3.19. Zach, why don't you give your final rating first?
All right, this is not Citizen Kane. I'm not going to compare this movie to Citizen Kane.
I'm not touching on the Citizen Kane thing, but...
Yeah. maybe that's movie map. Who knows? I think it's like straight down the middle 3 for me. I enjoyed myself. I actually did not feel like this movie felt too long. The chapters did keep it broken up. I liked the flashback structure. I kind of wish we would have gotten to it a little bit earlier. It felt like it took a very long time to set up that we were going to be telling these stories. And I just wish we got more. Like, this movie could have been very, very good. This movie could have been like a, I don't remember if I liked Syriana, but I feel like this movie could have been more like Syriana.
This movie reminded me a lot of Syriana, and a movie which I remember liking a lot more than this one as well.
Yeah. So,
George Clooney doing spy things, which was very fun.
I mean, maybe in another world you see George Clooney mentoring Brad Pitt in a movie. Oh, wait. Later on the same.
Dot, dot, dot.
I swear, Ocean's 11 comes up in like every other episode of this podcast, God. I feel like.
Hey, I love that movie, and so do you, so don't even go there.
I do love the first Ocean's 11. I do not understand why people like Ocean's 12.
Is there a doctor in the house? All right. Let me give my final rating here. So I'm with you. I'm with the listeners. I think I'm actually still even a little lower than you and the listeners. I really wanted to love this movie a lot more than I did. There's a lot to like if it's just tweaked and tightened up and done a little better. I think Brad Pitt and Robert Redford are both better in a dozen other films than this one. I think Tony Scott has better movies than this one, for sure. And maybe we'll get to some more of them. I think this is going to land at a 2.5 for me. And that is going to give us an average of...
I think it's
going to
be about a 3, I would imagine. A little bit less
2.89,
than
2.89, which we'll wrap 2.89. Up with.
2.89.
Yeah. 2.5 for me.
Well, I'm glad I'm right in line with the average.
There you go. Boom. Nailed it.
And if you didn't send in your score and you want to influence the average one way or the other, make sure you do that.
Yeah, let us know.
MovieLadder@gmail.com. Send that in.
Boom.
All right, well, let's get into connections now. So we'll start with, obviously, connections back to last week's movie, The Sting. Yeah. So, of course, we've got Robert Redford.
Yep.
We've got him being a mentor. He was the mentee in The Sting. Yep,
exactly. So I think that's our title connection, is Robert Redford goes from mentee to mentor.
Yeah, that's very, very long. How about just Robert Redford mentorship?
Okay, sure.
And maybe we'll have more because I have other connections. Do you have any other connections to last week's movie?
To last week's movie? Obviously, there's the con within a con of both the, the con that they're pulling on in the main flashback, and then the con that the Robert Redford character is also pulling underneath that with the CIA people in the room as he's telling the story. So the multiple layers of storytelling both map, with The Sting and with this.
Yeah, should we have the word con in our on our title connection, like Robert Redford mentorship con? Sure. Or something. We can keep tweaking this. But yeah, we should have Khan in there. And of course, Muir does Khan Bishop to recruit him. Like when he recruits him, he takes on a fake identity and cons him. And of course, he's also Khan in the CIA, which is, great point. I didn't really think about that.
There's a couple of multiple layers of Khan there.
You do have that, like, who is the Mark, right? Yep. Like, they talk about who's the Mark in The Sting. They also talk about who's the Mark in this movie with Elizabeth specifically. Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Yeah. and I have two more, but I'll let you. Do you have any other connections?
Oh, go for it.
All right.
You hit both of mine.
Robert Redford hiding a paper material underneath his clothing.
There you go.
He hides the folder underneath his clothing.
And the wallet with the money.
And the wallet with the money and the Sting.
Yeah, there you go.
Sad that he never got to have his retirement party that he invited that analyst to. Poor analyst. Mm-hmm. The guy just wanted some friends. And then we have characters pretending to be drunk in this movie.
There you go. Good job.
Characters pretending to be drunk in the other one. What would you prefer, gin or scotch?
Definitely scotch.
12-year scotch only. Nothing. Mm. I do like the, connecting back to The Spy Who Loved Me from last week. We did have Bishop say, I thought all spies drank martinis.
There you go.
Fast person. All right. What about connections to other movies from this year?
Yeah. So obviously we have the war movie montages that connect us to all of our various war films that we've done this year, including Nash and Stripes and Private Benjamin. And basically there's a lot of recruiting people mm-hmm. to do something in our filmography so far this year. We have, excuse me. We have a lot of cons as far as The Sting and What's Up Doc and Inherent Vice. And we've done a lot of con movies this year.
True. I also, we had Jack from the Robert De Niro character from Meet the Parents was a CIA agent as well. So second movie we've done about a CIA agent.
Did you teach that in the CIA?
Yeah. I don't think that we've done any other 2001 movies this year, looking through the movies from that year. Nothing else comes up, although maybe ones will. I did have a couple other ones written down as well. Amadou, an actor named Amadou, he was actually played Martinez in Sorcerer. So he was the doctor.
Oh, right. Yep. Yeah.
So he's a one-name actor, Amadou.
We also have people traveling overseas and falling in love, which, you can say match to Crazy Rich Asians. And that Brad Pitt travels overseas to Beirut and falls in love with someone that he shouldn't.
If only Bishop would have gotten married, it would have just been with this podcast so well. So, all right. And anything else from this year?
Not that I can think of right off the top of my head. I'm sure the listeners will point some stuff out.
Yeah, I'll be curious. I don't think there's like a ton. The kind of flashback structure, like telling stories over a number, like that chapter structure. You do get that telling Brokeback Mountain over a number of years, and as well MASH and Stripes and Private Benjamin. We talked about all of them being like kind of episodic as well. So, all right. And then what is your movie map?
So I have a couple things that I wrote down initially. So recruitment using false identities and a special op maps pretty well to Reservoir Dogs, especially when things fall apart and people start getting beaten up and tied to chairs. Witness, also someone falling in love while undercover. You can map Brad Pitt falling in love with his mark in this to Harrison Ford in Witness. And then, of course, we have the Vietnam stuff from Apocalypse Now and him being set off to perform to do an assassination, just like Martin Sheen's character in Apocalypse Now was set to kill Marlon Brando. So there you go. Those were my three big ones.
Not Citizen Kane?
No, that's Citizen Kane.
I think Apocalypse Now is a very good one. That's probably the closest. We didn't really have any CIA or spy movies that we did last year. Right. Top Gun, of course, Tony Scott connection. Really, that's probably the one that I would land on. Although, we did have Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and also Interview with the Vampire. And very
also,
fun.
Unreliable narrator involving Brad Pitt because you don't know whether the story he's telling is true.
Right.
In some of the scenes with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say Interview with the Vampire.
No, with Brad Pitt, with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, true. But the fun Tony Scott connection I have is, of course, Tom Cruise is in Top Gun.
Right.
Directed by Tony Scott.
Yep.
Brad Pitt was in Spy Games, directed by Tony Scott.
Yep.
Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise were together in Interview with the Vampire.
Yep.
Which got a lower total score than this one.
Boom. So. Was that released in 1991? Because that would be the
I don't think so.
I don't think it was. Yeah.
I think it was 93. Okay. 94.
Okay.
Yeah. Do we have any movies that were released in 1991 that we've done this year? I don't think we do. That we've done. Speed was 94. Meet the Parents, My Best Friend's Wedding were both later. Stripes was in the 80s. Stripes was 81. Nothing from 1991 that we've done. Haven't done much in the 90s really this year, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. Well, Lebowski, 98. So.
Yep.
All right. Well, so that's Spy Game. And that was going to be a total score 2.893. Yep. I'll log it on Letterboxd. Our title connection, Robert Redford's. Oh, you put Robert Redford's Long Con as yours?
I like that. Redford's Long Con.
Robert Redford's Long Con. Do you think we need mentorship in there?
Nah.
All right. Robert Redford's Long Con it is. Not Big Con?
No, because we did Big Con last week, right?
The Big Con. The big Madeline Con. Robert Redford's Long Con. Will we stick with Robert Redford next week for the movies we're going to pick? We'll find out, yeah. So it's now time for our ladder rung segment. This is where we read suggestions from the listeners. We have suggestions us, your hosts, brought, and we will pick a final four, and then we will pick somehow down from that final four down to a final one. We've been a podcast of the people this year. We've had a lot of listener connections that we've done, although I do think Spy Game was my connection. I finally got a point for Spy Game.
Yep, you did.
But, you know, I think we had a lot of listener connections. We'll see if the listeners continue. All right. First one is 3 Days of the Condor. Of course, this came up last week. This is like a spiritual prequel, maybe. We'll find out.
This is from Jeff, by the way.
This is from Jeff. Thank you. So we have Robert Redford in the CIA. Would be perfect if the characters were the same name. Yes. We could watch that and find out if this was supposed to be the same character.
Mm-hmm.
Next one is Ordinary People, directed by Robert Redford. I was actually thinking about Ordinary People on my personal movie ladder because I just watched I just watched Fisher King, and they have a video store that they run in Fisher King. And there's a porn parody of Ordinary People in there.
Is it called Ordinary Peoples?
I can't remember what it was called. but it was something like Ordinary People. I think it might have been Peephole. And then finally, last one is Red, a spy movie about the CIA. I think this is about older spies from the CIA. I think
it's that's the Bruce Willis, Helen Mirren.
Morgan correct? Freeman. Yep.
Yeah. Gotcha.
All right. From Megan the Librarian, an American stuck in a faraway place, negotiation between the U.S. and China, directed by a Scott brother, starring an actor from the Ocean series, an actor from Game of Thrones, and an actor from Captain America the Winter Soldier, and Benedict Wong. Of course, I'm describing The Martian from 2015.
Boom.
Wow. I am impressed, Megan. End on a high note. You should keep sending things in, but don't send anything back. I don't know. No, keep sending things in. But you got to end on a high note. All right. The next one that she has, I have this on my list, too. It's from 2003. Basically sounds like the exact same movie, except this time it's Al Pacino and Colin Farrell in the CIA.
Yeah.
This is The Recruit. I actually discovered this movie this afternoon when I was looking for movies to suggest. Reviews are terrible for The Recruit.
So yeah, I believe most of the time they spend their time at Langley. If I recall, I've seen the movie. In fact, I think I may have even seen it in theaters. I don't remember exactly. But yeah, I think it's mostly like in the training course and they're, it's very different.
Yeah, it looks good. I'd be curious if Colin Farrell's accent slips in this. I did want to mention Stephen Delane's accent definitely slipped a couple times.
Oh, yeah,
in for Spy Game. I mean, he's a fine actor. I don't know why they cast him, but. It could have really been any.
They wanted somebody that looked slimy. And he looked pretty slimy.
Yeah, well, I
he didn't do anything too slimy. Yeah.
He didn't do anything in general. He just kind of sat there and smirked.
Right.
Anyways, and Megan's third one, Days of Thunder, directed by Tony Scott. She said she's never seen this movie, but based on the description, it sounds like it's another one with a mentoring plot involving an older movie star. That is Robert Duvall. And so another Robert. and a younger one, Tom Cruise. So Robert mentoring another actor from Interview with the Vampire. We just keep going back and forth between Interview with Vampires and Interview with the Vampire.
I do like Days of Thunder. I
mean, I've actually never seen Days of Thunder.
Really fun Michael Rooker performance as a rival race car driver.
It's too bad this didn't come out in 1991. It would make it a very good 1990 for Days of Thunder. All right, and Jim, I almost call him Jim the Librarian. He's Jim the Scientist.
Jim the Professor.
Yeah, Jim the Professor. And he said, I'm going to go with another Brad Pitt spy movie that is Allied, Robert Zemeckis from 2016.
There you go.
Was that Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie in that movie?
I believe it is, and they're World War II special agents, I believe.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Now I'm trying to remember. I never saw Allied. I do love Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah.
Huge fan. Obviously, he did my favorite movie. It is not him, and it is Marion Cotillard.
Okay.
Him and Angelina Jolie.
Got it.
So, nice cast. Jared Harris in this too. Lizzie Kaplan. So, I don't know why I went on looked up the Allied of all of the movies that we've talked about. All right, next we have John Gilpatrick, and he said Crimson Tide is probably my favorite Tony Scott movie. Not sure if it's on the radar at all, but it's basically the perfect movie.
And I do like Crimson Tide. I watched it earlier this year. It's a lot of fun.
I've never seen it. I have seen Hunt for Red October, which is basically the twin movie of Crimson Tide.
Exactly.
I did respond to John and I said radar, and he said he did not even mean to put that. All right, and then Kyle making his return to the ladder rung segment. Spy Hard, an actual spy parody movie, came out several years before this one. Mm-hmm. Leslie Nielsen playing a spy. True Romance, Tony Scott's best, would be interesting to compare back to back. True Romance, another blind spot for me, so I haven't seen
it. True Romance.
Written by Quentin Tarantino? Is that
written by Quentin Tarantino, directed by Tony Scott? Lots of really interesting performances in that one, including a young James Gandolfini.
Oh.
Which could be interesting given a certain
Michael Gandolfini movie coming out.
A certain movie hitting HBO Max in a little over a week.
Yeah. All right.
Very interesting.
Next one, 3 Days of the Condor, would be interesting to watch a younger Robert Redford in a political thriller. Redford is only 1 year older when making this film than Pitt was in Spy Game. And your listeners could watch it on September 24th, the anniversary of its release. Oh, man. What year was 3 Days of the Condor? Like 79?
I thought it was early 70s, but maybe I'm wrong.
Let's see. I'm 75, right in the middle.
Okay, mid-70s.
75.
Nice.
Cool. All right. And then finally, Burn After Reading, a favorite Pitt flick. Yes, I do love Brad Pitt. CIA, really Burn After Reading, some could say a parody of CIA work.
There you go.
Also with Pitt and I guess that there might be some other cast connections. I can't remember for sure.
Yep.
So, all right. Those are listener suggestions. Nothing from Olin. Let's see. Did he respond to me? Nope.
I did not get anything from Olin.
I messaged Olin and asked him again, and he did not respond. So
it's possible he wasn't able to get to it in time.
I know he couldn't get the movie. Apparently, Spy Game is not available in Ireland for whatever reason, or Scotland.
Embargoed.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I get to go first this week. I have a lot on my list. I'm actually going to crib from Megan the Librarian, and I'm going to pick a Ridley Scott film as well. But this one actually, is a little more direct of a parallel, and that's the Leonardo DiCaprio, Ridley Scott CIA thriller Body of Lies.
BODYS.
I have never seen BODYS. Body of Lies. It's so hard to choose.
Pick all of them because I have a bunch on mine.
I know. I also thought about Robert Redford leading a crack team of spies, and that's Sneakers.
Yes.
The early 90s Sneakers.
Yep.
I have a few others. I wanted to do one that directly connected to spies and had spy in the title.
The Spy Who Loved Me.
I've never seen any of the Spy Kids, and I think if we did Spy Kids, it would actually be really fun, and we could probably have a good guest. Spy Kids. Mm-hmm. And then for my fourth one, or am I going to do four or five this week? F it, throwing in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I think that's a really fun movie. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I've not seen it. It is on my list.
It's really, really fun.
Yeah.
And then, my list. Because nobody else brought it up, I have to bring up Bourne Identity to be on my list as my fifth pick because of the direct connection of Brad Pitt turning down Bourne Identity to do this movie.
When did Bourne Identity come out? 2003?
2002, I believe. So, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I got a Bourne Identity on my list, although I'm kind of saving the Bourne movies for potential podcast project maybe someday if I ever do it. Because I've only seen like half of them, and I'd like to go through all of them. And I don't want to subject the listeners to Bourne month on this podcast. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll see what the latter dictates. All right. Well, I did have 15 movies on my list, 16 movies on my list. But the listeners took a bunch off. True Romance, Three Days of the Condor, The Recruit, Sneakers, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Still leaves a lot, though. So the first one, this is the Tony Scott movie that John Gale Patrick raves about, and I either saw it and forgot it, or I saw it or I didn't see it at all. That's Deja Vu, starring Denzel Washington. Just Tony Scott connection. Right around the same time, it's going to be more of that aggressive Tony Scott style. I think it's like a sci-fi angle to it, I believe. But I can't. So it'd be almost like, you know, watching a war movie and then watching like the Tomorrow War or something. Let's see. I'm going to go next. Another 2001 movie about people being captured. And it's another one I've never seen. I've wanted to. It's Black Hawk Down.
Okay.
So I don't remember who did Black Hawk Down. That wasn't Ridley Scott, was it?
It was, no.
All right. Yeah, we'll look that up if we pick that one. But came out in 2001. So
nice.
Good connection there. I lost my notes. There we go. Next one, Brad Pitt being mentored, new on the job. A love interest that complicates things.
Mm-hmm.
It is directed by a guy who made a movie with the word game in the title, but it is not The Game. It is Seven.
Good one. And he has a mentor.
Yep. Exactly. Yes. And
Morgan Freeman mentorship.
Complicated relationship in that. All right. I only have a couple more. I think next one I'll do. I think this came up last week. I'll do it again. Robert Redford again. Old man getting too old for this shit. And he's got a gun. Old man and the gun. Robert Redford.
Good one. And that also involves a relationship that sort of complicates things for him.
Ah, nice. So
okay. There you go.
All right. I got a couple also rans. What do you got for also rans?
All right. For also rans, obviously, I have the spy parody Spy. That's the Melissa McCarthy movie.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I thought about throwing in The Spy Who Dumped Me, which came out a couple years ago. That's, what's her freaking name from That 70s Show? Mila Kunis.
Oh, really? Okay.
I believe Justin Theroux is the spy who dumped her.
Oh, maybe? Man.
Mm. And then
Black Hawk Down is Ridley Scott. I just looked it up. So
is it? Okay, nice.
Dueling 2001 captured movies between Ridley and Tony.
I thought about throwing Man on Fire back in there. I did not.
Yeah, I had Man on Fire.
One, two I wrote down at the last second as we were talking. One, Brad Pitt stuck in a foreign country where things start to go terribly, terribly wrong. I thought about throwing in World War Z.
Is he stuck in a foreign country? I think he's at home.
No,
I guess he does go. Well, and he does. And there's actually the like trying to steal something from a medical facility.
Right.
And the cholera. So World War Z wouldn't be bad, except the movie sucks. But
too late. And also I thought about because of the CIA analyst trying to do a covert op that pisses off all of his superiors. The Tom Clancy movie, Clear and Present Danger, with Harrison Ford in the analyst role instead of Robert Redford.
Nice.
What else do I have?
Red Corner
is a Richard Gere movie where he is stuck in a Chinese prison and trying to get out.
Speaking of 24, that happens in 24 as well.
Yeah. Oh. The Counselor I also thought about for Brad Pitt and Ridley Scott was on my also rants. What do you have for also rants?
All right. So a character named Bishop in a movie by one of the Scott brothers. I wrote down Alien.
Okay.
These are also rans, well, obviously.
Aliens is Bishop.
Oh, damn. I didn't double check that. All right. Well, in a universe where there's a guy named Bishop. very tangential connection.
Nice try.
When I wrote down True Romance, I also wrote down True Lies.
Okay.
For a 2001 movie that also stars Ken Long, which I think is a blind spot for you, I wrote down Vanilla Sky. Could have done that Interview with the Vampire connection, done another Tom Cruise. An assassination attempt, I had The Parallax View. Okay. And a movie that I was very excited for and apparently has already come out and I heard nothing about it. And I'm really bummed because I thought it looked good. It's by the director of Casino Royale and GoldenEye. And it stars Michael Keaton and Samuel L. Jackson. It is called The Protégé and it's about a spy protégé with Maggie Q.
Oh, no.
And it's already out and nobody's talking about it. So yeah. I didn't even want to suggest it. But
bummer
for sure. So. Right. All right, we just listed a whole bunch of movies. Well, why don't you list the ones that are actually in contention, Brendan?
All right, so we have 3 Days of the Condor, Ordinary People, Red, The Martian, The Recruit, Days of Thunder, Allied, Crimson Tide, Sky Hard, True Romance, 3 Days of the Condor, Burn After Reading, Body of Lies, Sneakers, Spy Kids, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, The Bourne Identity, Deja Vu, Black Hawk Down, Seven, Old Man and the Gun. And you didn't
I like
pick
the way you say Deja Vu. You say Deja Vu.
Deja Vu. Thank you.
Man, it would be easier to eliminate movies than it is to pick.
I know, right?
I would do just about anything on this list. Well, I really think... I think except Bourne Identity and maybe Red, I would do every... And The Recruit, I would do everything on this list. But I can't. So it's down between a couple. I love the connections on The Martian. And so I think I have to just, you know, because of Megan the Librarian's like excellent connection work, I think I have to go with The Martian, although there are other movies I would pick.
And I think because it's a blind spot for both of us and actually is a direct connection, supposedly. Oh, but I kind of also want to go with... See, I'm hesitant to go with True Romance because The Ringer did that stupid rewatchables podcast on it that seeps into everything. And it's constantly...
What happened with their... What they do on the rewatchables? They do something special or just that we just keep doing movies that were on the rewatchables?
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't want to keep doing that.
Well, I'm pretty sure they did The Martian on rewatchables as well. That's and I'm shocked cool. They have not done Spy Game on the rewatchables.
That's a good this point. And they have done True Romance.
Yeah. Go with your heart.
I'm going to pick True Romance. F it. I think True Romance is great, and if you haven't seen it, I want you to see it.
I've never seen it, and it's been on my watch list for a while. I thought you were gonna go 3 Days of the Condor. I feel bad because it got nominated multiple times, and it is like the direct connection to this. Maybe that will come up sometime in the future. It sucks to miss the anniversary watching it in just a couple days. Really could have been fun. Although I wouldn't be watching it until next week probably, but either way.
But I mean, I mean, shouts to 3 Days of the Condor. Shouts to Allied, which I also considered. I haven't seen it, but I want to. Crimson Tide is a fantastic movie.
Also blind spot for me. Burn After Reading, Indian. Really good. Really solid list from
great the job on the list.
Yeah. Probably whatever Olin was going to suggest is really good. I bet you he'll send me his connections like as soon as his suggestions as soon as we get off. All right, so I get to pick from yours. We have Body of Lies, Sneakers, Spy Kids, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and The Bourne Identity. I'm eliminating The Bourne Identity.
Fair enough.
So I have four to pick from. All four are movies I've never seen.
And two of those are blind spots for me as well. Spy Kids and Body of Lies I've not seen.
Yeah, I had Sneakers on my list, and it has a great cast. I think I'm going to do... I really like Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I don't like the movie. I've never seen it, but I like the idea of picking that. But I think that... I think that Sneakers makes sense. And we just stick with Robert Redford for a little bit longer. Okay. Get him bumped up maybe close to that five-timers club.
Redford month. And Sneakers has like a fantastic cast. I mean, it's River Phoenix, Sidney Poitier.
Hey, guess what? Sneakers came out in 1992, so just 1 year after Spy Games takes place. And also, Robert Redford and the CIA. Maybe we'll have 3 weeks of The Condor in a row. So
Sneakers actually a CIA movie, or do they actually are they part of a
shadowy
special...
U.S. intelligence agents?
So they don't name the CIA as the thing. Okay, cool. Yeah. They can't call it the CIA.
No.
But I mean, it's Dan Aykroyd.
Lace up your sneakers. Well, you still got to pick from mine.
David Strathairn? Oh, man.
Hey.
All right. Yeah, I still have to pick. Sorry. I have to pick from yours. So you've got Deja Vu, Black Hawk Down, Seven, or The Old Man and the Gun. Of those, I feel like the most direct connection and also connects to things we've done and would be the most unique is Deja Vu.
Interesting. That's the one I think is the weakest. I mean, I'd be interested to check out Deja Vu, but
I think it is Tony Scott. I mean,
it is. It's and got Val Kilmer in it as well.
I want to do Deja Vu because I think it. I think one, it could lead to some other great connections, and also it's sort of the weird, trippy movie we like, and that we get a lot of mileage out of.
Yeah.
For the pod, I think
and it's fun. It'd be fun to do like a sci-fi ish.
Yeah.
I think it's like a I don't know if it's a cop or detective. I either saw this and I remember nothing about it, or I just never saw it. And I know John G is a big fan, so
when you watch it, you might feel like you've seen it before.
In get some deja vu. Yeah, exactly. No, I really think Black Hawk Down or Seven is like the best connection. Should we start doing like what is the best connection of the week award for one movie that has the strongest connection to what we just watched? We're not picking it. We're just saying.
Really great connection.
I think it would be Black Hawk Down or Seven. But
yeah, I think Black Hawk Down is a really great connection that I'm not picking. I think
it's, yeah, that's fine.
You're not getting any points for it, but sure.
No. All right, so our final four, all of that preamble. We have The Martian, True Romance, Sneakers, and Deja Vu. See it again. Martian, surprisingly, not streaming anywhere for free. It's on FX now, but you're going to have to.
Ah, gotcha.
True Romance is on HBO Max.
Isn't it? Doesn't that mean it's on Hulu if The Martian is on FX?
It says the FX app. I think that's different.
Whatever.
True Romance, HBO Max. Sneakers, yeah. HBO Max. Deja Vu, Amazon Prime. So those, all three of those are easily streamable if you have one of those services.
First off, shouts to The Martian. I love The Martian. It's come up too. A million times on this podcast. I just watched the Community episode this week where they get stuck in a flight simulator and Donald Glover gets to be the captain, and it's fantastic, and it really reminds me a lot of The Martian. So shouts to that. But I think we can eliminate The Martian.
Yeah, I think
so. For this week. I really think it's between True Romance and Deja Vu.
All right, let's do Deja Vu. That'd be fine. Like, because, you know, I don't want to get stuck in this, like, CIA stuff. And True Romance, besides being Tony Scott, which, I mean, it could come up next week.
There's not a ton of connections, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we would be forcing the latter to get to the Sopranos movie coming out in 2 weeks, and that doesn't, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
it's still a weak connection, even if we did.
Yeah, and
so
yeah,
I think
James Gandolfini is in it. So.
Yeah, I think Deja Vu is the way to go.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm curious about Sneakers because I remember seeing the box for Sneakers at the video store growing up, and not knowing what it was about.
It's a classic box.
Yeah, yeah. Like them looking through like a wallpaper or case file or something.
Exactly.
It would be very fun.
Yeah, so it's Redford, Sidney Poitier, Dan Aykroyd, Timothy Busfield, River Phoenix, David Strathairn, Mary McDonald, Ben Kingsley, James Earl Jones, Donald Logue. Who else is in this? Holy crap.
Yeah, but Deja Vu is Denzel David Washington.
Tomlinson. Yeah, that's true.
Let's go Denzel.
Yeah, let's do it. This will be our first Denzel.
So what is our connection to Deja Vu? Just Tony Scott?
Just Tony Scott. Tony Scott Thriller.
Tony, show me a Tony Scott non-thriller, please.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Early 2000s or mid-2000s Tony Scott thriller. But we'll get other connections, I'm sure. Of course, Deja Vu is streaming on Amazon Prime. I feel like we're going to have a bunch of people like, really? We're doing Deja Vu? But whatever, we're doing it. And maybe one person who really likes it, we can get them to come on if they want to be a guest and talk about it. So that could be fun.
And maybe we'll need to watch it multiple times as possible.
True. You watch it forwards, you watch it backwards. Not to give away my movie map for next week, but who knows? All right. Deja Vu it is. Streaming on Amazon Prime, at least in the United States. I do not know where it's streaming in Canada or Ireland. Hopefully streaming in both places, though.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, Brennan, what are you going to watch this week? What do you got coming up?
Tomorrow is the Survivor Season 41 premiere, 2-hour premiere. So really excited for that. I know you are as well.
I'm like trepidatious. I'm like most. Yeah. I'm gonna watch.
Well,
I mean,
you're cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I have very low expectations.
I will say when I say that I'm excited, what I'm really excited to do is make dinner and sit down to watch it. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens after that. But I'm really excited by the meal I'm going to make tomorrow.
You're excited for your, what are you going to eat? I'm going to eat my dinner. Yep.
Yeah. So I, yeah, exactly. So I have like, I have some turkey, ground turkey bulgogi bowls.
Nice.
Lined up, and so that'll be really good and a little healthier than the beef bulgogi. But other than that, what else do I have this week? What am I going to watch for my ladder? I've been stuck on Night Moves for my ladder for a couple weeks now and haven't moved on. Mm-hmm. So if any of the listeners if the listeners have any ideas of what I should watch now that I've watched Night Moves, for what my next movie ladder should be for my personal ladder, write in and let me know or tweet at me.
So when you send it in that, so did you watch the Night Moves from 75 or the one from 2013? Because Kelly Reichardt did a movie called Night Moves in 2013.
Yeah. Oh. I did not watch the one from 2013.
Have you seen The Conversation?
I have seen The Conversation.
Okay. Yeah, because that would be.
I try to go with Blind Scott's for my personal ladder. Yeah. So, but yeah, if anybody has any ideas, let me know. Really enjoyed Night Moves. But, what week are we up to on the Criterion Challenge?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm a week behind. I have the movie Safe, which I'm probably going to watch shortly after we get off the Skype call. Recommended by Megan the Librarian, actually, a few weeks ago. I knew I'd heard about it somewhere, and I couldn't figure out where. And if you give me a second, I can tell you what our Criterion week is this week. And just scrolling down.
This week was the Kelly Reichardt top 10.
Kelly Reichardt. Speaking of Kelly Reichardt, directed by John Cassavetes.
Oh, Cassavetes. Nice. Yeah.
So what? I don't know. What's a good John Cassavetes movie?
What do I have lined up from Cassavetes? I believe I have. There's a movie that's like a play within a movie. Let me scroll down and see if I can find it. Opening Night is the film that I've lined up for Cassavetes. Actress Myrtle Gordon is a functional alcoholic actress who is a few days from the opening night of her latest play. Sounds a lot like All About Eve, so very excited for that.
Nice. Yeah, I probably will watch Killing of a Chinese Bookie for Criterion this week. I've heard it's very good, and I've never seen it. Although, Megan the Librarian, half a star for Killing of a Chinese Bookie.
Oh, no.
Man, that's worse than her review of Spy Game. But either way, we will be back next week to talk about Deja Vu, and so we'll be able to see it again. And, of course, the connection is Tony Scott, quote-unquote thriller. I really like calling it a Tony Scott thriller because there is nothing else you could, you know, there's show me the Tony Scott rom-com. Let's do that.
Yeah, do that for me.
Brendan, you have any other podcasts coming up?
Or anything? Not this week, but, you know, we'll see what's coming up in the future, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see the pipeline. Yeah, someday I'm going to do an F9 podcast. This is what always happens with Furious Years Only. At some point, we're going to do it. I just don't know.
There is a new Star Wars show premiering on Disney Plus called Star Wars Visions. There are currently
negotiations.
Yeah, I know. There are currently, basically, it's an anime that is going to fill in a lot of, like, basically, they let a bunch of different animators make their own Star Wars story, and they're not really connected. They're all
so like individual. Star Wars What If, basically.
It's kind of like Star Wars What If, yeah. And so I'm excited to check that out, and maybe I'll be able to talk my way into a podcast for it. But
over on Post Show Recaps,
we'll see. Over on Post Show Recaps, but we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can follow Brendan at
Fitzy Brendan on Twitter and Letterboxd. And keep mailing in. We had a really great listener response to Spy Game, which was very surprising that we had so many people reach out wanting to give their feedback on this one. It made us very, very happy and gave me a lot of work to do in the outline of this.
Including, one. I mean, we had people who even responded to the tweet, never sent in a score, but Lansing State Journal sports columnist Graham Couch said that he loved this movie. Somebody replied to that, said very underrated movie. And Anthony D'Angelo, our guest for Damned United, his wife Jess. Even said this is a good movie. Lots of fans of this movie. We saw that. We were all very excited to watch it. Didn't quite live up to the expectations we had, but glad people like it. And tune in next week to find out what we're going to be watching next after Deja Vu. Follow me at Brooks ZA on all platforms. Follow the podcast at Ladder Movie on Letterboxd and Twitter. The movie ladder gmail.com is how you can send those emails to Brendan. And we'll be back next week to talk about Denzel Washington in Tony Scott's 2008 movie Deja Vu. 2006.
We'll be back next week to talk about the 2006 Tony Scott film Deja Vu. So be sure you send in your listener ratings and scores.